10 seconds, we're starting. All right. Okay, that was cool. Good morning, members. The Minnesota Senate Education Policy Committee will now come to order. We have a quorum. I have a few opening remarks I'd like to give, and then after which I'd like the members of the committee and the staff that's critical to getting our work done all introduce themselves today. And I'm going to ask you to say who your favorite teacher was and what district, school districts you represent. So if you could be ready for that after I'm done with a few opening statements that I'd like to make. So with that said, finance policy gets all the, or finance committee education gets a lot of attention because it deals with 42% of the state budget, and that's very important, obviously. But the policy committee deals with what's going on in the schools, in the trenches, so to speak. And I hope that with respect to this session, we can reach agreement on a lot of issues because there's a lot going on bipartisan-wise in our schools right now. And I just kind of made a quick list this morning of some things that maybe we can reach across the aisle this session. The school board renewal of operating referendums and reducing the amount of paperwork for special education teachers and menstrual equity bill ending period poverty and getting more teachers of color into our classroom and getting working on recruitment and retention and respect of our teachers and school safety. Our kids are leaving school with post-traumatic stress in some cases. It seems like something we can reach across the aisle and fix that problem. Mental health and well-being and getting our counselor, getting our counselor to student ratio up to where it should be. And maybe there is some partisanship on this one, but the civics bill I've been trying to get through for 6 years now, and financial literacy requirements to graduate in ethnic studies class, and device-free time, and student nutrition, and so those are some of the goals that I have, and I'm looking forward to working with you guys and any bills that you guys, the members of the committee want to bring to my attention. Feel free, my office door is always open to the members of the committee. I ask for your patience and understanding as I navigate this new experience for me, having never been in this position before, and I look forward to working with all of you more than you'll ever know, the members, the stakeholders in the audience, the public, and let's give our schools the tools they need. And just so you know where my head's at, especially for the new members, because I quote Article 13 on the floor of the Minnesota Senate every opportunity I get, and Article 13 of the Minnesota State Constitution says it is the duty of the legislature, it's the only duty we have as legislators, according to the Minnesota State Constitution, it's the duty of the a Republican form of government dependent upon the intelligence of the people. It is the duty of the state legislature to create a general and uniform system of public schools. And I think that's what's going to guide us on our work this year, is that general and uniform, because we need to help our students become intelligent, self-actualized individuals who are ready for the responsibilities and in order to engage in their communities and leave this world a better place than they found it. And how does this bill, whatever that bill may be, help our public school teachers and our public schools make this a reality for all of our children in this wonderful state. So with that said, Senator May Quaid, favorite teacher, the school districts you represent, and maybe what experiences or interests makes you want to be on this committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hi, everybody. My name is Erin May Quaid. I represent Senate District 56, which is Apple Valley, Rosemount, and a tiny portion of Eagan. It also happens to be the school district I was born and raised and educated in. So I will not be naming a favorite teacher because all of them are still teaching in my schools. They were all my favorite teachers. But I really did enjoy choir. So Ms. Sagan, who is retired, was a fantastic teacher. I'm incredibly passionate about education. I wouldn't be who I am today without the incredible educators and community that supported me getting here Incredibly passionate about feeding people in schools. Hungry kids can't learn. Making sure that we have mental health supports for students, that we have the appropriate respect for the profession of teaching, the people who support teachers and students in schools, bus drivers, lunch providers, counselors, nurses, librarians, all of those things. And also making sure that we have schools that respect every single person who are in them, as our student body continues to be increasingly diverse, both ethnically, racially, and gender. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And Senator Quaid is the vice chair, and the ranking minority member is Senator Coleman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, hello, everyone. I'm Julia Coleman, and I represent Senate District 48, which is the eastern portion of Carver County now. I represent District 112, which is eastern Carver County schools, 110, which is Waconia, and then have a number of students that go to schools technically outside of my district. For example, a number of students in Chanhassen go to Minnetonka School District, so have a number added to that as well. My favorite teacher, now I'm a Hill-Murray Pioneer alumni, so not too far from here, was Mr. Otto. He taught 10th grade biology and put a love of learning and science into me that inspired me to initially go to school as pre-med until some major lapse in judgment made me do political science. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Abler.
Well, thanks, and it is a real privilege to be here for more reasons than one. One is 186 votes. That's how close my election was, so I'm just glad to be anywhere here. And from Anoka and most of Coon Rapids and a little tiny bit of Andover. And it's my 24th year of being elected, Mr. Chair. I cannot believe that. I was younger when I got here, but I came in on an education platform way back then. And Anoka District, as you may know, is the largest school district in the state. We may bring that up again sometime. I know people like to be reminded of that. I always kind of bought the idea. I liked school. I enjoyed it. I was just thinking what teachers, and Mr. Ferguson in fifth grade, he was just so down to earth. Mr. Klund taught me math, and Mr. Shuckert taught me physics and how to think. And so I'm a strong supporter of every student getting a chance, and most of the kids are going to go to public education. We founded a charter school. And everybody should have a chance to succeed, and I'm keen on that, and I'm grateful for the chance to be a part of this committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Bolden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Senator Liz Bolden. I represent District 25, which is primarily Rochester. It's a Rochester Public School District. I'm very excited to be here. As I think about favorite teachers, it is really hard to narrow it down to one, really hard. But one that comes to mind is my first grade teacher, Mrs. Phillips, who I have not been in contact with and I'm sure is long retired. But I just remember, you know, those very first days of, you know, making friends and learning to tie shoes. And just it was a really good introduction to school life. And so I remember her fondly. I'm very excited to be here and excited for the priorities that you laid out. Education is near and dear to my heart. I worked in nursing education for about 10 years. And so, you know, making sure that all of our students, all of our littles have what they need to be safe and cared for is really important. And we've got a big opportunity and responsibility on this committee. So I'm excited to do that work. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it. It's an honor to serve on this committee with you and others. My name is Zach Duckworth. I'm from the city of Lakeville, District 57, which encompasses a large part of the ISD 194 school district, of which I am a graduate and of which I have kids that attend. I'm also a former school board member from that district. So very excited to be here, work on these issues, and make sure that our kids are front and center, that they're getting the help that they can to succeed academically, and that we're doing right by them in our communities. So thank you.
Senator Hochschild is testifying in another committee right now. Senator Kunisch.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Senator Mary Kunisch. I represent Senate District 39, which are the communities of St. Anthony Village, New Brighton, Columbia Heights and Hilltop, Spring Lake Park, and Fridley. I'm also the Education Finance Chair, so the other half of this partnership, and look forward to doing the good work for our students here in Minnesota. I It is really hard to narrow down a few good teachers that I've had because I've had a number of them, but I went to this tiny little Catholic church or school, and contrary to what a lot of stories are, I had a lot of good experiences with the nuns that were our teachers. I remember Sister Emmanuel was my first grade teacher, and learning to read, you know, she just really instilled the love of reading in all of us. There was Sister Del Rey, who was very artistic and encouraged us all to use those artistic talents in the best way possible. And I remember when I was in like fourth or fifth grade, we got our first nun of color into the school system, and what a stir that really arose. And my dad was on the school board, and we talked a lot about that, about how it's important to have representation like that. But mostly I remember my second grade teacher, Miss Ruland. It was during the Vietnam War, and her brother was in the war at that time, and we would write letters to him. Second grade letters to him and his friends of encouragement. And it's just, you know, as I look back on that, I think how important it is that we recognize and address the social issues at hand, even in our youngest learners. So I'm really excited to be here with all of you and look forward to the work that we're going to do.
Senator Mann.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Elise Mann. I represent Senate District 50, which is Bloomington and Edina School Districts 271 and 273. My favorite teachers, I have two of them, was Mr. Legvold, who was my sixth grade teacher, who just made learning just the most exciting, wonderful thing ever, and Mrs. Kaiser, who taught me how to speak English. I am here today because I believe education is one of the most important things that we can do as a society, is to educate our population and our children. It's the one thing that opens all doors for everyone. And I also have three children, ages 6, 8, and 10, who attend school, and I want to make sure that they have the best experience possible, of course. Thank you.
Senator Weisenberg.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Nathan, excuse me. My name is Nathan Wiesenberg. I'm from Senate District 10, so Central Minnesota. I represent many school districts. I guess I would say my favorite teacher would be my mother. She's a teacher for probably 45 years now and still subbing. She taught me to always try, never give up, and if you do that, you can always succeed. And that's something we should probably tell our kids. I have three girls that are 11, 9, and 7, and I'm looking forward to helping all kids get a good quality education. Thank you.
Thank you, committee. And if we could just hear from all the critical staff, the interns, who your favorite teacher was, I would really appreciate that. And that if you would introduce yourself and the role you're going to have in this committee. Ms. Hofer.
Mr. Chair and committee members, hello. My name is Jenna Hofer. I am a nonpartisan fiscal analyst with the Office of Senate Counsel Research and Fiscal Analysis. You likely will not hear a lot from me in this committee, as this committee is focused on policy work. You'll hear more from me in the Education Finance Committee. But I can still be of use to the committee in determining which bills might need to be passed along to Education Finance. But my favorite teacher was from Anoka Senior High, which, as you may have heard, is part of the largest school district in the state. So she was my ninth grade government teacher. Her passion and interest in the subject really inspired my interest, as well as this career. Thank you.
Ms. Chelseth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Betsy Chelseth, and I'm the nonpartisan analyst on the this committee and then the E-12 Finance Committee. As for my favorite teacher, I went to Nevis High School up in northern Minnesota, and it was Mr. Minkle. He was our high school math teacher, and I learned a lot, and he made every day fun.
Ms. Lewis.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Amory Lewis. I'm your nonpartisan counsel for the E-12 Policy as well as the Budget Committee. So I'll do a lot of your like legal research and such, but favorite teacher, I grew up in Indianapolis, Indiana, and my favorite teacher was a first grade teacher. She had been a nun, but then moved to the school where I was going, and her name was Miss Cutler, and I was Miss Butler. But the reason she was a favorite was her patience. Even at that young age, there was a lot of attention to detail on my part, so very slow in getting things done. But she encouraged that and had class cheer for me when I did keep up, and also was the one who really taught me to read. In fact, because I was so frustrated as the youngest member of my family that everyone else could read but me, but she got me there and caught up to where my family was.
Ms. Elling.
Hello, I'm Dana Elling. I'll be the committee administrator for the Policy Committee and the Finance Committee as well this year. I grew up in Western Carver County. I went to school at Norwood Young America Independent School District 108. And I actually had two favorite teachers. One was my first grade teacher, Mrs. Jenkins, because she taught me to read. And after a big tornado ripped through our community and I went to school the next day, she hugged me and she said, "I'm so glad you're here and I'm so glad you're safe." And my other favorite teacher was Mrs. Rosengren. In high school, she was our debate coach, our speech coach, and she was just a fabulous person, always upbeat and fun, and she was a great person to have on the bus when you were going to some kind of a speech event. So, and I'm very happy to be here with the committees.
Ryan Majerus is homesick today. Ms. Green.
Hi, I'm Reagan Green. I am the committee legislative assistant for education policy as well as Senator Swedzinski's office. I grew up in the Minnetonka School District, and my favorite teachers would be Mrs. Lovelace, who is my second grade teacher and rings true to her name. She taught us all to be ourselves and applauded us when we were exactly ourselves and taught us etiquette classes, which has made its way into my life today. And then I would be remiss if I didn't mention my language arts teacher and English teacher in high school, Mrs. Thomas, who is still at Minnetonka High School, who taught me my love for Quiz Bowl, actually, and facts, and as well as my love of writing, and led me to political science in college and now. Thank you.
We have an intern, Ms. Berg, are you here? And we have two pages assigned to our committee. And Mr. Cook,
well,
last but not least.
Ed Cook, and I'm going to go with a coach, sophomore basketball coach, Mr. Hoffman, and I think they probably should have cast him for the lead in Hoosiers. Anyway, that would be my choice.
And your role here?
Senate Republican Research.
All right, everybody. Thank you for those introductions. Our packets are filled with information today. They're also posted online. And if there's ever an issue with anything in there, contact my committee legislative assistant, Reagan Green. So that's it. Let's do this. Our first testifiers today are going to educate us on the roles of the nonpartisan staff. And that'd be you three.
All right, Mr. Chair and members. The three of us are your nonpartisan staff from the Office of Senate Counsel Research and Fiscal Analysis. And obviously, each of us play a different role. And my role as the Senate Counsel will be primarily your bill drafting, and amendments, but also there is a legal research component to some of the bills, not all the bills all the time, but that will be my primary responsibility. We tend to, between the three of us, although less Jenna in this committee, often divide things up by subtopic or so such as teachers or charter schools or whatnot. But I think it's better to err on the side of if you have a request, maybe send it to all three of us, and we can triage of who would be the one responsible and be in touch with like further questions and such. But it kind of makes it a little easier and making sure a little, I guess, more efficient to get the answers to you. So, and
see what you do. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. And again, my name's Betsy Gelseth, and I'm the analyst on the committee. So I help Ms. Lewis a lot with any of the policy bill drafting, and then we can do amendments. I can also help with any research you want done, or if you do have fiscal questions, let myself or Ms. Hofer know, and we can help. Any questions you have, just include all three of us, and we'll get it done. So thank you.
And I will wrap up for us. Again, my name is Jenna Hofer. I am the fiscal analyst assigned to this committee. As this committee works primarily with policy, you won't hear a lot from me, but I can assist with identifying when bills have fiscal implications. We can also help with writing bill summaries. That's one component that hasn't been mentioned yet. Otherwise, you can ask us for any assistance. Any of the requests that come through our office are confidential, and we do assist members regardless of political party, and we're certainly glad to do anything we can to help this committee with their work. Thank you.
Does anybody have any questions of the three of them, members? Take them at their word. They're amazing people. I've worked with two of them for 6 years and one of them for four. Three, so, and they really are what they said they are. So next, we've got somebody from Pelsby giving us a presentation. And introduce yourself for us, and the mics are hot, so take that as it may. And we have today Dr. Elena and Ms. Vaught, and take it away.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for having us here today. Hopefully you can hear me all right. We're getting our slides set up, hopefully. Maybe. Well, that's happening. I will start, and hopefully it'll get going. Again, my name is Dr. Elena Bailey. I am currently the Interim Executive Director for the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board, also known as PELSBY, and I have here with me my colleague, Michelle Hirsch-Vaught, who is our rulemaking attorney, and we're just here to share a little bit of information about PELSBY's jurisdiction and work, as well as some recent data that you all will be getting in the Supply and Demand Report by February 1st. And then some information on our rulemaking projects. Fingers crossed, this is technology we'll be working with us shortly.
While we're waiting, why don't you share with us your favorite educators from your childhood?
I can do that. So I am a proud graduate from Robbinsdale Cooper High School and from the IB program, which I'm a huge fan of. And Mr. Zuccola was my IB English teacher who turned me from a physics major, I still did the degree, to eventually getting my PhD in the humanities and social sciences. So there you go. All right, thank you. We're back on track. So I'd like to start with PELSBY's mission and vision. And so our mission is ensuring all Minnesota students have high quality educators in their schools. And then our vision is to ensure equitable education practices through high licensure standards, quality educator preparation programs, and stakeholder engagement. Thank you. So PELSBY is made up of an 11-member volunteer board comprised of classroom teachers, administrators. There's some very specific roles in there, like special education and things like that, as well as a teacher educator, so someone who works in a higher ed teacher preparation program. So representing all facets of teacher training and licensure and education. That board oversees our agency, which is made up currently of 21 staff members, and you kind of have a visualization here. That includes the executive director, our licensing and operations manager, the director of ed policy, which is also my current role right now. And then we have pockets of staff that deal with licensing and operations, board administration, teacher preparation, and policy. So I'll dig a little bit into that scope of that work on the next slide. Thank you. So this is to give you a picture just from the last calendar year of 2022 of kind of how broad the scope of work here is for that 11-member volunteer board and the 21 staff members for the state of Minnesota. So Pelsby oversees 38 teacher preparation program providers. So that's including alternative providers, higher education. And of those providers, they oversee nearly 760 licensure programs. So those are licensure areas specific to elementary, secondary social studies, things like that. On the bottom left hand, that number you see, that's the number of dedicated staff members we have to each one of these areas of Pelsby's work. So we also oversee educator licensure and compliance. So you'll notice of this year, that past year, we had nearly 113,000 licensed teachers in Minnesota. And I'll share some data on that later on, some breakdown of that across tier licensure and racial ethnic demographics. We issued about 9,600 new licenses last year. About 4,100 permissions, so those include out-of-field permissions for teachers who hold a license already or innovative program permissions. And then we processed over 26,000 renewals, so we stay quite busy in that regard. In addition to that, we do board work, so we host at least a monthly board meeting. Sometimes we have additional, so last year we held 13 meetings if there are needs to deal with special deadlines for maybe administrative hearings or things like that. We also hold an annual board retreat, so lots of policy work takes place at those board meetings. We oversee educator ethics, so discipline cases, for example. We only had 63 actions taken in 2022, so again, given that we have 113,000 licensed teachers in the state, it's a great number that we have not had high discipline cases or actions taken. If for those who maybe are newer to the committee or to Pelsby, or for those who maybe do know this, you'll recall, Pelsby was created in 2017 and officially began January 1st, 2018. And Pelsby's made up or took on the work of what used to pertain to the Board of Teaching and then part of the licensing department within the Department of Education. So those two were brought together to create our agency. Part of that work has involved active rulemaking, so our mandate that was handed to us was then to revise all of the teacher licensure and preparation rules. So we've been very active in that work, and currently we have three active rulemaking projects, and my colleague will speak to those a little bit later on. And we have one dedicated staff member to that work. And then finally, we administer two grants currently. One of them used to be the Q grant, if you're familiar. It's currently the Collaborative Urban and Greater Minnesota Educators of Color grant. And then we also administer a teacher mentorship grant. So that's a bit of the more exciting part, is being able to spread those state funds to do the good work of recruiting and inducting new teachers. If you want to go to the next slide, I will turn it over to my colleague to talk a little bit about the tier licensure system.
Mr. Chair, committee members, again, my name is Michelle Hirschvogt. Just to keep on trend, I am from New Berlin, Wisconsin, so I graduated from New Berlin Public Schools, where Mrs. Starkey, my AP literature teacher, was my favorite, and every book that I read beyond, I think of her reading it to me. I have been given the task of providing an overview of tiered licensure, a snapshot of where Minnesota's teachers come from today, and then add with some recent board actions that we've taken in an effort to support our teachers and our school districts. So, implemented in January 2018, we have four tiers of licensure. You will see that each of these tiers vary in both requirements and limitations. So I will go through this in fairly high detail. Please know that Chapter 122A and Chapters 8710 and 8705 are the best place to go for your statutes and rules, which I'm sure your legal counsel can point you to or we can as well. So our Tier 1 license is a one-year license that is tied to three things the teacher who applied for the license, the school district, and a particular assignment. This can be renewed up to 3 times. There is no testing component to this, and the district must, as part of the application, affirm that they attempted to hire either a tier 2, 3, or 4 licensed teacher. They posted for that requirement and that they were unable to fill that position otherwise. A tier 2 license is a 2-year license. Again, it is tied to the teacher, the school district, and the particular assignment. There is not necessarily a testing component, though, because it has some choose-your-own-adventure, and that's sarcasm, there are many different pathways to a Tier 2 license, one of which is testing, but many do not involve testing. And we consider this to be kind of your content expert. So you can come in onto a Tier 2 having a master's degree, having been enrolled or completed teacher preparation, having held a license in another state. Moving on to our Tier 3 and 4, these are what we consider our professional licenses. These are held independently just by the teacher. They can move to any district throughout the state, teach in any Minnesota public school or charter school. A Tier 3 license is good for 3 years. It can be renewed indefinitely. And again, it's not tied to a school district or a particular assignment. The most common pathway to a Tier 3 is by completing teacher preparation and passing exams, though you also can obtain a Tier 3 by completing the licensure via portfolio process. And then finally, our Tier 4 is a 5-year license. All of our 5-year, all of our teachers who held the 5-year professional license, they were converted to a Tier 4 license, so most of our teachers in our state hold the hold this Tier 4 license. The way you obtain a Tier 4 is by holding a Tier 3 for 3 years, and then you're able to move on to that Tier 4 license. Okay, so of all of our actively licensed teachers on a Tier 3 or a Tier 4 license, as of this year, most have gotten to this licensure pathway by having completed a Minnesota teacher preparation program. After that, we see out-of-state teachers, which is not surprising given our border states and how many people are transplants, myself included, from Wisconsin, the Dakotas, etc. We also had over 1,700 folks obtain a license through that licensure via portfolio pathway. And then finally, we'll highlight that 99 teachers have moved from the Tier 2 to the Tier 3 license after 3 years on a Tier 2. I finally want to highlight 3 different actions the board has taken recently to support removing barriers to licensure. One of the most notable is that we have, our board has approved the use of out-of-state exams for those who completed exams as part of their out-of-state license. Those can now be used to get that Tier 3 license. Historically, we've had a little bit but folks who've come out after having completed teacher prep in another state have come to our state, have had to be on a Tier 2 license until they've completed their exams in state, but now they can use their out-of-state exams, so that more quickly gets them to that Tier 3 license. The board also removed the posting requirement, which is required for those who are seeking an out-of-field permission. An out-of-field permission allows a teacher to teach outside of the scope of their license or outside of the field of their license, so a district does not have to post for those 15 days. And then finally, we have restructured staffing and support in order to better support our licensure via portfolio process and pathway. I'll hand it back to Dr. Bailey to go through some demographic information.
Does anybody have any questions as of yet, members? Senator May Quaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you'll bear with me, I was writing questions down as you were going. I was looking on the slide where you're talking about your jurisdiction and scope of work, and you talked about the number of licenses issued. Do you know how many people applied?
Mr. Chair, Senator May Quaid, we do not have that offhand. I can look into that if that is information you want. And I will say for all members of the committee, if there's data that we have not shared that you're interested in, we'd be happy to follow up with that. Yeah.
Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to ask maybe one or two short questions that have to relate to the slide that talked about board actions to remove barriers to licensure, and they kind of pick up off of some of the things that we worked on last session. Number one, are there other things that are being considered that you're looking at that would potentially remove barriers? I know we've talked, or at least many of our districts have expressed to us a significant teacher shortage, and I know that's probably where some of this is coming from. And part of what we looked at last year, too, were short call substitute teaching licensures or permissions. So just curious if things like that or other items are being considered that would help address this issue that many of our districts are facing. Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Duckworth, that is a fantastic question. I know we worked with many of you here and then other representatives and senators on different bill language around short call subs. And our board recently voted to advocate this year again for some legislative changes, ideally, that would help with short call subs. So I know last year you all considered different short call sub pilot programs. And so our board would like to, is again, kind of would advocate for similar language that would allow individuals who do not have a bachelor's degree but have an AA be able to be short call subs as long as they receive some sort of training from their district. And then additional changes that would allow ESPs and paraprofessionals who have been working for at least 1 year in their district to short call sub. So that's some of the language that we hope will be before you this session. And then we've partnered with MDE, the Department of Education, quite a bit on kind of immediate ways to respond to teacher shortages, and then of course thinking long-term because there's that balance of short-term, long-term need. Many of the actions are, you know, again, we host regular info sessions with districts to help them navigate some of the in the weeds questions of like, I have this teacher, how do I, you know, get them licensed or this person that's interested. So we've been doing a lot of that stakeholder engagement, removing posting periods. We've done some work to help retired teachers who maybe their license has lapsed. They now can get a conditional 1 year license to finish their renewal, get the renewal requirements out of the way while they can be in the classroom and then get their license back so they can come fill in some of these needs as well. And then we published a toolkit with MDE to get out to districts to say, here are kind of the common questions and issues that we hear you facing. Here are some ways to navigate around this. But it is a pressing need, and we look forward to hearing and helping you all as you solve that through legislative changes as well. Thank you.
I have three questions, but I appreciate Senator Duckworth's question, too, because I think that's something we got to deal with this session. Is that teacher recruitment and pending shortages. The 63 action is taken about ethics. Is there a theme to that? Like the number one ethics issue is this particular topic? I'm just going to throw out the three questions right now, okay? What kind of, I've always wondered this, what kind of documentation does a district need to provide that they tried to find a suitable tier two, tier three, tier four? Is it really easy documentation? They just need to fill out a form, or is there follow-up that that we can ensure that they truly did try to find a more qualified teacher to meet those children's needs? And third, I'm just curious what this portfolio looks like that you've referenced a couple times in your presentation. So I'll just let you have at it. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Chair, I can start, and if you want to jump in at any time, feel free. So the first question was actions taken. I'm trying to think how to delicately. Many of the things we can't speak to, but oftentimes there are actions where, you know, teachers are under a lot of pressure, things happen in classrooms, and so often actions are related to, like, trainings they need to take to ensure that they can best serve our students without having, you know, maybe an issue where there was a, you know, a classroom incident that their anger wasn't regulated well in that situation or something like that, right? So they typically are situations where training resolves it. We do have, you know, other items, but I'm trying to be delicate because I know that it's, you know, I don't want to give the wrong idea about our teachers and the profession. They're humans, as we all know, and they, you know, it's a lot of pressure to be always in that perfection public eye. So a lot of reactions are usually related to trainings they take to ensure that there aren't incidents in the classroom with, you know, contact, you know, anger, things like that. Happy to go into more detail, but trying to, you know, be a little delicate around that. As far as the district, that was the next one, right? We work also with some of the boards that post for jobs as well, but they typically fill out paperwork to let us know, you know, we posted for this period and we're not able to find someone. So it's usually paperwork that's filled out. We tend to, our licensing staff, even though small, tends to work pretty like hands-on with those districts and helping them try to figure this out. So a lot of it is we're in conversation with them so often anyway that we kind of know or take at goodwill what's happening there. Did you want to add anything to that one or? No.
No, it's part of the application form. They're not expected to submit, you know, screenshots of every single application that was submitted and interview notes or things like that. It's really an attestation. We trust our districts to be providing the best information they can and to be trying to find the best teacher candidate for themselves. So it's it is paperwork, but it's an attestation and our staff working closely to get those processed.
And then the final question, portfolio. So the portfolio process, I think there's only one other state, I believe, that has a portfolio process. So we're pretty innovative in that in Minnesota. It allows individuals who don't necessarily want to go to teacher preparation, so we have higher ed based and alternative providers, to use their experience, whether it's previous experience they had or their current teaching experience, to demonstrate how they meet our teaching standards, the standards of effective practice, or content standards, to get their full professional license. And so they submit, you know, often kind of assignments or assessments and things to demonstrate and say, here's how I meet these standards, and this is what qualifies me for this professional license. We've been the last 1 or 2 years doing kind of an overhaul of that process based off of feedback we've gotten that it's an avenue that needed improvement, to say the least. So some of that is restructuring staff to better serve those folks and to align it better with the people who know those standards really well and teacher prep, as well as we are working with an online platform now to streamline this so that individuals or educators who are looking to get licensure via portfolio can do this all online and interact with the reviewers in a more kind of seamless way. So we really do want this to continue to improve and be a very easy, viable pathway. But that's the portfolio process.
Thank you. Senator May Quaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had two, they're really technical questions. In the Tier 2 licensure, is it a master's degree in anything, or is it a master's degree in education?
Great. Mr. Chair, Senator May Quaid, I can speak to that. So it's a master's degree in anything, and you get your license in that content area.
Got it.
So if I were to get my Tier 2 license, I could pick a couple things. I have a master's in Spanish and Latin American Studies. I could teach Spanish, or I could use my PhD to teach English, sociology, something else like that. But great question.
Senator May Quaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My last question is, these Tier 1 and Tier 2 licenses that are limited to 3 renewals, what typically happens after those 3 renewals? Do people move into a different tier of licensure? Do they move on from teaching? What's happening with that population?
It's a great question. Mr. Chair, Senator May Quaid, that is, we have some data on people who move up the tiers. I would say a good portion are in there temporarily and then they leave, but we do have people who move up the tiers and stay. We also have, you know, there's good cause for additional renewals, so often those folks will go beyond those renewals because there's still a need, right? We're facing a teacher shortage, and so for many, many cases, they continue to serve in those. One thing that we are cognizant of and trying to work with our district on is greater kind of mentorship and support so they can move up those tiers and stay permanently in the profession. So we don't see enough of those folks moving up. I don't have the data fresh on hand right now. Our data systems are somewhat limited in their capabilities, so a lot of this we pull manually, meaning we look at each individual file to get to get some of these numbers. But I can definitely look into some more detail on that if you would like.
Senator Abler.
Well, thanks. I was going to hold on my question, but since we're just talking about this different levels, just an observation. I jumped ahead a sheet. Sorry. I do that. They didn't have hyperactive stuff when I was a kid. But but it seems to me like the level 1 and 2 for teachers of color, it actually is working. There's between 25% and 30% of the applicants in that niche are that compared to a much lower number elsewhere. So I just thought that was kind of the point. And as a person that's trying to promote that as well. So anyway, that's all I got. Thanks.
Mr. Chair, would you like me to speak to that a little bit?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And then proceed.
Yeah, and so I'll speak to that a little bit when I go through the data, actually. Because one of my points, we'll look at the number versus the percentage, is a little deceptive. But part of that, we do have a higher proportion of educators of color who hold a tier one and tier two than their white counterparts. The numbers are still small compared to, like, the majority of teachers of color hold a tier three or tier four license. Largely what we find based off of kind of national research as well as conversation with our prep providers and others is that the reason for that are because of structural barriers around the cost to go to teacher prep and things like that. So it's about the accessibility of those tiers. And so our board has talked about the solution then is to address the cost, address the barriers, testing and other issues that keep them from getting, you know, to make it so there isn't that higher proportion. So I think that it's a good observation. And I think part of that conversation has to be, okay, so what are the reasons why that's true? And a lot of we found is, you know, removing those barriers around cost and testing. But if I may, you said proceed, Mr. Chair. Great. So this is data that we will be providing to you all in the 2023 supply and demand report. So it's our biennial report that we submit to the legislature on February 1st. So we're finalizing that for you now. But this will give you a picture of the teacher workforce right now. So this table right here shows the number of licensed teachers we have. And then we provided that broken down by racial ethnic group as well as tier. We have permissions over there on the side, so you get a sense of how many are issued. And they're counted twice, so a teacher who, you know, holds a tier four license, often many of those folks hold out-of-field permission because they may be licensed in math, and they're doing an out-of-field permission to teach physics or something like that. You'll notice, though, and this is actually something I wanted to bring up, so thank you for the cue, that overwhelmingly the majority of our teachers hold a Tier 4 license. So nearly 94,000 of those teachers hold a Tier 4 license, and then about 14,500 hold a Tier 3 license. So when we get to the percentages on the next slide, when you see, you know, 5% of, let me see if I can do quick math, right? About, you know, 110,000, 5% of that are teachers of color, well, that's a much larger number of individuals than 30% of 5,000, right? So just keep in mind that the numbers are very different. So this next slide gives you a sense of, on each tier, what percentage of those tier holders belong to each racial ethnic group. So it is true, about 28% of tier one holders are people of color, but that's 28% of, sorry to make people dizzy, about 1,100 people, right? So it's a smaller number. And then you can see as we go on, the percentages here for the other tiers. Tier three is up higher for our educators of color as well. And I think that's actually a good sign of growth. We'll talk about some kind of changes of things that happen there. This next slide shows you for within each particular racial ethnic group, what proportion of those individuals are on each tier. So for example, amongst our American Indian or Alaskan Native educators, what proportion of those folks hold a tier one, a tier two, a tier three, or a tier four? So you can kind of see. And as you look through the data on that fourth column there, you'll still see that for each of our racial ethnic groups, overwhelmingly the majority of them hold a tier four license, right? So again, just to give you some context and some, you know, an image of what our teaching profession looks like in Minnesota. This slide is just to give you a sense of what things look like across different regions of Minnesota. So the previous data we collect through licensing, we collect data two ways, through licensing, and then we annually collect data from districts on teaching assignments, employment data, demographics. And so this comes from that STAR report, the district reporting. But it allows us to tie this information to specific economic development regions. So you just have the total number of individuals in each of those regions and then what percentage of those individuals are on each one of the tiers. One thing to note is that for the most part, it's fairly similar across all economic development regions. So we don't necessarily see a higher use of tiers in one area versus another. So I think that's an important kind of piece of context here. Oh, I hit something. There we go. So this is a popular slide and point of data and conversation often. But, you know, partially, as you all know, in statute, one of the ways we define teacher shortage is the comparison of the racial ethnic makeup of teachers in a region to the makeup of students, right? So this gives you a picture. And again, this is from district data. So these are individuals who are not only licensed but actively working in a classroom last year. So it's of that, you know, we have about 113,000 licensed teachers, but about, you know, 60,000 active classroom teachers. So it's pulling a slightly different number here. But this lets you know for each region and overall what that comparison is. So of our active licensed teachers, a little over 6% of them are BIPOC educators. Although, of course, we have an increase in students here to be about 40% students of color. So still quite a gap there. But I know this has been a question, so I'm going to preemptively answer it. The data we have where we share about 5% of our teachers are teachers of color, that's looking at all licensed teachers. But when you look at who's in the classrooms, it's slightly higher here with that 6.2%. So that's that difference in that number there. Can you go? I think there's one more. The last thing we wanted to share with you, and we've added this to our supply and demand report, is just an image of our teacher candidates as well, so that you can think of, like, as we're coming through the pipeline here, what the racial and ethnic makeup is of our teacher candidates. So these are folks who are enrolled in teacher preparation. This is reported to us last year. So you can see we have about 17% of our teacher candidates are BIPOC. So there you go.
Senator May Quaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had actually written this down as a question, and it kind of came here, so I want to dig in a little bit. I wrote down, is there a teacher shortage or is there a shortage of teachers in the classroom? And it looks like we have, you know, almost 113,000 licensed teachers, but only 81,000 in the classroom. So that's 72%. So where are those teachers that are licensed and not in the classroom?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator May Quaid, that's an excellent question. And Pelsby last year, in an attempt to start to answer that, because it's a great question that you all have been asking us for a couple of years, we actually conducted for the first time a teacher survey to all licensed teachers. We worked with a vendor to do this, so it's kind of a sampling. To answer that question of you're licensed, we have more than enough licensed individuals to be in the classroom, but we still have that shortage, right? And of course, there's common, you know, speculation and themes, but we found in the survey were reported things like, you know, school climate was a reason why people left. Of course, autonomy in the classroom, you know, pay, these are other things cited. You know, this was our preliminary, kind of our first step at doing the survey, and we're hoping to do that alternating years with this supply and demand report so we can continue to gather this data to figure out then, hopefully, data for you all as you propose solutions to get those folks back in the classroom. I will say some of our licensed teachers, a portion of those are retired folks who maintain their license, or people who maintain their license here but are using it in another state. As we mentioned, we get lots of out-of-state teachers, but we also have folks who, you know, go over to work other places. But even with that, there's still several tens of thousands of licensed teachers who definitely can and ideally will be back in the classroom. So it's an excellent question. And I did not bring that report, but we'd be happy to share with you. We have a nice, beautiful summary of that Minnesota, MinSpire is what we call it, teacher survey that we'd be happy to share with you all. So, yeah.
Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to ask this question later, but it kind of fits here, and it plays off of Senator May Quaid's question as well. Last year, we had some pretty good constructive conversation regarding that supply and demand report and how we report shortage areas for teachers. Curious if Pelsby is looking at that, or are you looking at recording more data, tweaking definitions? I know sometimes you may have a teacher in the classroom, but because their licensure isn't of a certain tier, they're getting counted as a vacancy. So just curious if you're taking a look at that. I know we probably have a couple folks on this committee who are throwing off your numbers. I'm saying that teasingly. They've got their license, but they might not be in the classroom, for example. So just curious if you're diving into that at all and seeing if it's a tweak you can maybe make to that report.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Senator Duckworth, also great question. So none of the data here deals with the teacher shortage areas, but it is in that report. And I know we worked with folks last year on changing the definition. There was some legislative change proposed. It didn't pass, so we actually, because of that, our definition has stayed the same. But partially because we needed, there was a fiscal note attached that we need more staff to be able to collect that data. So we do have districts that report, and this will be in the supply and demand, you know, difficulty filling vacancies and things like that. What was proposed last year that I think is an excellent suggestion is reporting the difference between unfilled positions versus right now our definition, which follows kind of the common way that its shortages are reported federally and then, you know, in different states, is any position that is not filled by someone with a permanent indefinitely renewable license. So tier three and tier four licenses, because it can be used anywhere in the state and renewed indefinitely, those professional licenses do not count as shortages. Tier one and tier two teachers are absolutely classroom teachers, and we have worked with some of our stakeholders and colleagues to make sure that's clear in our reporting language to honor the fact that those are teachers, right? And they fill an important role in our classrooms. But because they can't be renewed indefinitely, that still leaves the district in a position where that's not a position that's filled permanently for them necessarily. So that's reported as a shortage if it's someone who holds a permission or a tier one and tier two license. We are trying to, you know, we explain that better in the report to show that that's why we define it that way. But to have districts report the unfilled and to be able to process that data, we would need a little bit of extra help, because as you can see, our staff of 21 is quite busy, as you saw with that information on our scope of work. But we do think that actually would be a fantastic thing to collect and report as well. So, yeah.
I just have one more question as well. Is this the slide? Back one slide, I think. The Headwater Schools, that's a pretty sobering statistic that almost 80% of their students are students of color and indigenous, and 4% of their teachers. That's accurate, what I just said?
Yeah.
We can do better. We're going to work on that.
Okay, I'm going to round us out with rulemaking and then how to get a hold of us. So PELSBY does have general authority. And the past several years, we have spent our rulemaking capacity to implement the changes that have taken place over the past decade. So not only for licensure, where tiered licensure went into place, but also a number of changes to teacher preparation went into place beginning in 2015 around ALT prep. So you can kind of see some of the areas that we've already adopted rule changes to. The next big area that PELSBY has been looking to is updating our teacher standards, and those are standards that are taught in our teacher preparation programs or that folks who are going through the licensure via portfolio use in order to get that Tier 3 license. So we have a number of license-specific standards that are open and going through the rulemaking process currently. We also have a rulemaking schedule that shows where each of our different teacher licenses will be reviewed and updated over time. And then I wanted to end with our process, which involves extensive rule development as well as stakeholder engagement. So our board has often dedicated a board subcommittee that holds meetings that are open to the public. We release drafts. We have our research and analysis provided to our stakeholders on our website. And we also, of course, follow the required rulemaking process that's set forth in both state statutes and laws. We have our listening sessions, and we also have opportunities for members of the public to speak at our board meetings. And so when we think about timelines, it's often how large is the particular project, what's being addressed. So we've been seeing around 24 to 36 months per project. What this timeline doesn't show is how many children have I birthed during a particular project. So as we've done multiple projects, I now have two. So hopefully we can keep getting some done, as I am not pregnant, knock on wood. Not appropriate, but I'll just share. We continue to learn more and more about how to make our rulemaking process and projects more available to the public. So it's something we continue to improve on. And are excited to continue working with not only our teachers, but parents and different stakeholders moving forward. Let you wrap up.
Nope.
We're happy to take additional questions.
Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The first one jumps back to the slide that was called Pathways to Professional Licensure. I'm sorry I didn't catch you then. It's pretty simple, though. It talks about pathways to professional licensure. One category was other, with 444 listed. Just curious, what is other? What are some of those examples, if you don't mind elaborating on that, please?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Duckworth, that actually is where we don't have data, so that's why it's other. We know that they earn their full professional license. Between the transition to tiered licensure, we've had several changes in our data system, which I believe you all have been in conversation quite a bit about. And so for the most part, we have records on it, but for older licenses, out of state, where we know they have the full professional license, but we don't have their preparation provider, for example, we don't have that, so that's kind of that miscellaneous category. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. If I may. Thank you, Mr. Chair. In terms of licensing standards and some proposed changes or what licensing standards might look like, I'm curious if Pelsby is looking at adding anything or if they've made any tweaks, changes to or desire to regarding the subjects of literacy, digital devices, having to teach or provide instruction remotely. Just wondering if that's anything that you've looked at in terms of some of our folks in licensure in the future.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Duckworth, I could speak to the first, and then if you want to speak to some of what's rolled in the 4615 project, that would be great. So literacy, we know, has been a huge conversation, and our board has been passionate about advancing and closing kind of the gap here with literacy. So what we did is the past 6 months, I should say, we convened two separate stakeholder groups, one teacher preparation providers and a separate one working with MDE around the renewal for licensed teacher side of it to get recommendations on whether it's, you know, policy changes that might be helpful or internal implementation processes. So what we found is around the teacher preparation side, we've been able to work with our providers on a new way that we can evaluate their programs specifically around literacy to ensure that we are that everyone is prepared to teach the science of reading, right? So that's something that we are implementing now. The board recently took action, I believe, in November or December. And then on the other side, we're still working closely with MDE on some of what they're proposing with their bold literacy plan. And our board has kind of navigated the position to advocate and be supportive of any and all proposals that are going to ensure that teachers are properly trained and prepared to teach the science of reading. So we've been approaching it that way as part of the priorities of the board, but partnering again with those who are maybe a little more advanced with our sister agency, MDE, to take some of that action. But I will say that that is something that the board has been heavy in conversations over the last 6 months about. As far as the devices and what was the other one that was mentioned?
Remote or distance instruction.
Perfect. Some of that fits into actually our current rulemaking project and some changes to standards of effective practice. Do you want to speak to that?
Sure. So our board is currently in the process of revising our standards of effective practice, which are our state's pedagogical standards. Those are the knowledge and skills that all teachers need to be effective day one in the classroom. That project began in 2019 and did include a number of revisions to technology standards. However, as we know, the pandemic really made us think differently about how education takes place every day. And so a number of additional standards that came from an international body, and I apologize, I can't quite remember the acronym, but they were added to a draft in 2021 after stakeholders and our board members convened to figure out what additional standards need to be added in order to really address what teaching looks like, what it looked like, and what it will look like moving forward. So we'll be seeing those beginning to be put into place soon, which is exciting.
I know for one, I'll probably need a review of that. My kids got a whole host of snow days recently, but I made the mistake of thinking we were going to go sledding outside when in reality it was still a school day. We just had to make sure that we were following our online instruction program, which is why I asked the question, and also because I know there are no shortage of things that Pelsby and others might desire to implement. I just want to get a sense for what's being prioritized and what things we're looking at implementing first before we get to some of those others. That's all I've got for now, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Senator Abler.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate getting the cobwebs out of my head on this topic. It's kind of nice to come back. And so there's a lot I don't know about some of the current stuff. Our baby just turned 24, and so he did go out. He just came to town with a new wife. So that happens. you mentioned that we take teachers even from Wisconsin, which I thought was kind of generous of us and probably laudable. Is it difficult for an out-of-state teacher to come here and get a credential? Is there like a compact, like some states have, they can just come and check a box? Do we encourage that? Can you just comment about that a little bit, please?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Abel, that's a great question. So we are in conversation with our kind of sister agencies or boards across the state about there's a movement for a state compact on this. What we found in those conversations is that it's really just formalizing the fact that we already have it, right? So in Minnesota, essentially, if you've completed a state-approved teacher preparation program that has the equivalent student teaching and you pass the licensure test, which used to be had to do the Minnesota test. Now with that board action change, can you go to that slide? You can pass the test in your respective state. You can come here and get your Tier 3 license, and it's as simple as that. There is one change that our board is kind of advocating for this year, which would make it even easier for those individuals who hold the professional license in their state, is you can't get that Tier 4 license here yet without those 3 years of Minnesota-specific teaching. So our board is advocating changing that to just licensure area specific teaching. So if you've been teaching for 20 years in Wisconsin, you have their professional license, you come here and get your Tier 4 license. Imagine that, right? So it's actually it's fairly simple. Our board is trying to, think of ways that we can continue to make that easier to help with that issue of shortages.
Mr. Chair, just...
Senator Abler.
Pay attention and I get more questions. I'll try not to
keep them coming.
Okay. Just curiosity now, do you find disparity across the country if you get a degree from one state or another? Is there like some, are we the best? Are we middle of the road? Or, some states are they like, well, okay, we'll take them, but that's not our favorite? Or, go ahead, thanks.
Mr. Chair, Senator Abel, that's a tough question. How do you answer that one well? I mean, I think in Minnesota, we like to believe we have best in the country.
Kids are all above average, yeah.
I think part of that conversation with other states, and we tend to be similar in how we define our professional licenses in terms of just completing teacher preparation. We are unique and hear that from other states in terms of our tiered licensure system and what they will or will not accept from us. But in terms of out-of-state, it tends to be pretty streamlined in terms of, this is what it takes to get a professional license. So we tend to trust their respective, assessment processes in those states. So, I'll say, though, that, of course, Minnesota is the best when it comes to teacher preparation. Yeah. Not because we evaluate teacher preparation or anything like that, but.
Well, thank you both for being here today. I don't think we're done with Pelsby. We do hear the 11 members, right? The governor will be appointing or nominating those individuals, and we'll probably hear from them at some point. And so we'll look forward to that. You guys have been through a lot in the last 5 years. I can't imagine the learning curve that you and what you've come up with in 5 years. It's nothing short of that word. So well done on that on behalf of a teacher who I do think my license lapsed. I got to go home and find out, though. I have a list of things to do tonight. And if you could provide us with that survey that you did, we would really appreciate it. One of my colleagues mentioned that, and I'd like to see that as well. So with all that said, we're not meeting next Monday. It's Martin Luther King Day, but Wednesday this week Wednesday, thank you. We're hearing from the Department of Education and National Alliance of Mental Health Minnesota and the Minnesota School Counselors. If COVID has taught us anything in the last couple of years, and it was going on long before COVID, but our mental well-being of many of our students is not what we'd like it to be, and I think that's going to be the theme of Wednesday's hearing. So do I just like, say goodbye?
Next week.
Wait. Next week what? We're not, what? I did all. Oh, Wednesday of next week, sorry. We're hearing a very important bill on menstrual equity. Is that what you wanted me to say? And so anyways, thank you. Meeting adjourned.